What I see going forward is we crash up. Instead of a deflationary crash, we have an inflationary crash because all roads lead to the money printer. No matter what happens, they have to print to service the debt. And every single year, they have to print more just to achieve the same amount of growth or even less than. But I definitely also think that central banks will be buying Bitcoin. I think that they will be racing to accumulate as much as they can because it is the hardest, scarcest asset that you can possibly own. And I think that that will come probably in this money printer will go burr and that will send Bitcoin up. I think it will send stocks and real estate up too, but Bitcoin's going to outperform everything. Very, very slowly. And I think that nation states will eventually realize how strategic it is to be a leader in accumulating Bitcoin and also mining it. I think Max Keiser always talks about how there's going to be hash wars instead of currency wars. And so I just don't see any way out except for people to...
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast where I'm joined by a very special guest, Natalie Brunell. Natalie, you dabble a bit in traditional media space where you've had some great arguments with the likes of Peter Schiff and others, and other gold and hard money advocates, but it seems like the gold bugs and the Bitcoiners are kind of missing in some aspect, some way, shape, or form. Do you think it's the potential that they don't necessarily believe that we're in a debt spiral and there's not a way out before or outside of, you know, maybe gold or Bitcoin or something like that, and that they're just completely stuck in the fiat-minded system? Or do you think it's something else that they're missing?
Hi, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I don't know why some gold bugs resist Bitcoin. I think sometimes new technologies can be a little bit intimidating, and we tend to wonder if they've actually got legs, and that certainly happened when the internet was first starting to come out. But gold bugs believe in so many of the same principles that Bitcoiners do. The free market, they want hard, sound money. They want something that can't be easily manipulated, and they want to get the power out of the central bank. So we have a lot in common, and I think that more and more gold bugs will start to become Bitcoiners, but we've got a ways to go.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And so, I mentioned previously that you, dabble a little bit in the traditional media space. You have a lot of great, clips from your times on Fox and other business and media outlets. Where do you think that that has like kind of transitioned? Do you think that they're starting to come around in the Bitcoin space, or do you think that there's still a bit of a disconnect there in the media outlets as well?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, there are definitely reporters, anchors, and producers that are starting to go down the rabbit hole and really understand the space, and they are becoming much more responsible when it comes to covering Bitcoin. And then we still have a lot who have no clue about Bitcoin, and they are amplifying the misconceptions and the misinformation and the FUD out there. So it's definitely a mix. It's funny because I came from that world. I mean, I know how the sausage is made, and unfortunately, when you're a reporter, especially at a major network where you're covering all sorts of different stories, you're not able to become an expert in really anything. And sometimes you have to put these stories together very, very quickly. You don't have the time to do the proper background and get the context that you need. And Bitcoin takes a while to understand. So you kind of come at it very quickly, and it doesn't offer you the opportunity to really learn and understand it so that you can report maybe some of the other angles that aren't out there as much. And I think that'll change slowly but surely. We're going to have more and more Bitcoiners in every industry, and that includes news because everyone benefits from adopting Bitcoin. And I'm eager to see that because I also think that when you learn about Bitcoin, you start to understand and peel back the layers on just how corrosive and damaging and destructive the fiat system has been in all sorts of industries. And that does include journalism. The incentives are just so broken, and the economic structure and models of journalism have changed so much because of the internet. And so I would be excited to see journalism return to its very noble roots of actually holding the powerful accountable and being a watchdog, as opposed to sort of being an arm of the government, which it feels like a lot of outlets have become sort of, married to the state, and they defend whatever the state says. And that's not journalism, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think a lot of people go to, you know, things like your podcast and other podcasts and kind of more of the grassroots journalism. Now, the traditional media outlets still seem like they have a lot of power when they're covering a lot of things, right? I mean, it's still great to go out. You reach a different kind of audience. Now, why do you think that the, you know, I guess the traditional media outlets have kind of, I guess, gone against Bitcoin for so long? Do you just think it's because the governments are, you know, almost influencing in a sense, or is it just a lack of knowledge? You know, where is the gap really, I guess, like lying here?
I just really think it's a lack of education. When I was a reporter, even though I had done really well in school and I had, you know, accelerated in my studies, I never learned how the financial system worked and I had very little financial literacy. And so I think a lot of my former colleagues and just people who are working in that industry, along with so many others, they just don't understand how the financial system works. So they're covering and reporting and opining on the symptoms of the problem, but they're not properly identifying what the real problem is. And Bitcoiners have identified the problem as inflation and as this monopoly over money that the state has, so it can manipulate it. It can manipulate the cost of borrowing and the cost of capital and inflate the monetary supply and debase all of our savings. And when you learn that, then you sort of look at all of your stories from a different vantage point. And I think you can be more responsible covering every single topic. And people just haven't gotten there yet. I think there's just a lack of understanding of what Bitcoin really is and behind it, really how the financial system works, what money is and how money is created and issued.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. And I think it's like great, like people like yourself, and we've even seen Michael Saylor kind of get some more appearances on the traditional media outlets. And speaking of Michael Saylor, we're recording this on September 13th. He recently just announced that him and MicroStrategy are buying yet again. So, you know, obviously it seems like businesses are starting to emulate the MicroStrategy strategy where they're putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet. Do you think that that's the next wave here in Bitcoin, where we're starting to see, you know, not only the ETFs and institutional kind of buy-in, but more on businesses putting it on their balance sheet as well?
I do, because really the performance speaks for itself. And I love when Michael Saylor puts up those charts of just how well MicroStrategy has performed because of their Bitcoin strategy compared to things like the S&P 500 and even some of the biggest tech stocks that have appreciated over the last few years. I mean, it is a winning strategy. So I think a lot of CEOs are looking at it and figuring out how they can copy it. Of course, it does take time. You have to go through a lot of steps and you know, a lot of approvals, and people really have to take the time within the company to do the research and figure out how to make the disclosures and all of that, because these massive publicly traded companies just operate very differently than, say, a small mom and pop business. So it's really exciting. And I think it's great that he's buying the top, he's buying at the bottom, he's going to be buying across the board and inspiring more people. And it's funny, his friend Eric Weiss tweeted right after he shared the most recent purchase, saying $1.1 billion doesn't buy you as much Bitcoin as it once did. And I'm sure it will buy you even less in the years to come.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, just as you kind of mentioned there, I have a nice like little graphic here. I mean, for those that are just listening and, you know, watching, I'm not able to put on the screen. But anyway, MicroStrategy started buying in August of 2020. At that time, their market cap was $1.2 billion. And 4 years later, here in July 2024, it got up to $38 billion. And that has gone from $124 a share to $1,800 a share. So obviously, seeing that massive amount of growth, it seems like a no-brainer. So why do you think like more companies aren't really, I guess, implementing this strategy? Is it because, you know, publicly traded companies, it's just so much red tape? Or like what do you equate to, you know, companies not really just all following in line at this point? Because like you said, it seems like a no-brainer.
I just think it takes time, and the wheels of large corporations and bureaucracy, they just move slowly. Like I said, I mean, you have to go through steps in order to make sure that everyone has done their due diligence. When you're talking about massive companies, there's a lot with regards to compliance and legal issues. And there are still some hurdles, because fair accounting, I believe that doesn't go into effect until January of 2025. 5. So when companies do put Bitcoin on the balance sheet at this moment, right now you can only mark when they go down, when the price goes down, as opposed to mark to market when it goes up. And so it becomes sort of there's a downward pressure on your P&L and on your balance sheet when you can only mark it when you suffer losses. So I think that it's just going to take some time, and we are very early. I think sometimes we just expect everything to happen overnight, and it just doesn't. Nothing works that way, and it takes time for people to really understand Bitcoin. I mean, if you're watching this, you're probably a Bitcoiner, and when you think back on your journey and when you started, how skeptical and how nervous maybe you were when you first invested. Like, is this really as good as it sounds? And it takes longer than 10, 20 hours to fully grasp Bitcoin, much less to be able to turn your company into one where Bitcoin is the reserve asset and you're allocating potentially billions of dollars to it.
Yeah, no, I hear you 100%. And, you know, I think it's interesting too, because Michael Saylor, obviously he's a billionaire and everything like that. But, you know, on the grand scale of things, he doesn't have a ton of influence on like the traditional media. Like if you ask, you know, your normie friends out there, very few of them probably know about Michael Saylor, who he is, MicroStrategy, all those things. But, you know, in this cycle, we're seeing, you know, obviously Donald Trump, RFK Jr., and a lot of people that I would call, you know, the quote unquote influencers or more influential people start to get into this cycle. Now, how big do you think that is for adoption, that, you know, people with larger influences, whether it's Michael Dell or some of these others, are now starting to, I guess, take that jump into the rabbit hole and really go down and learn about Bitcoin? Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick, sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power their show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well. If you could see it here, they've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show.
Well, it will be more influential if these major public figures and voices share the message with people outside of just the Bitcoin community, right? Because we do hear, we had the two presidential candidates come to the Bitcoin conference and give speeches about Bitcoin and talk about how they're going to support the United States protecting Bitcoin and even embracing it potentially as a strategic reserve asset. But let's say you turned on the debate. Do you see someone bringing up Bitcoin? Do you see it brought up by the moderators or either of the presidential candidates on a national stage? You don't. So I think that when we have people of influence and power start to talk about it to mainstream audiences, not just at Bitcoin conferences or to Bitcoin Twitter, that's when more and more people, especially newcomers, will start to pay attention to it. And I think that that will happen. But right now we are sort of sometimes in an echo chamber and in a silo where we get really excited and big public figures come out and they come to our events and they talk about Bitcoin, but they don't share that message across the board on their platforms.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just because we're still like still early, right? We're still a niche, smaller community and it's not really a big talking point? Or, you know, or do you think that it's maybe the public perception still around Bitcoin where, you know, if you bring up Bitcoin as a strategic reserve asset, like they're talking about the economy, maybe that just goes over a lot of people's heads. So they just, you know, kind of brush it off to the side. Like, why do you think that they don't necessarily bring it up in that aspect?
I think it's several factors. You've definitely touched on some of them. I think that They know that it's not something that everyone has embraced, and there are some opposing views that maybe they don't want to ignite or trigger. But honestly, I actually think that it's a sign that they're not true hardcore Bitcoiners, because I think once you get down to the depths of the rabbit hole and you develop this conviction that this is truly like the greatest invention, at least in our lifetimes, and it can set up the ability to reground our global economy on a foundation that is so strong, with a unit of account that can't be manipulated and can allow us to really interact in a more fair way economically and in an open, accessible way to everyone on the globe. I feel like you become like a Michael Saylor. You know, you can't help but talk about it everywhere you go, and you want to share the message with as many people as possible. But for people who are busy with their lives and careers in different industries, if they're not talking about it, then I do sometimes question their level of conviction and understanding, because when you get to be as hardcore of a Bitcoiner as many of us are, you want to share the message with the world. You want to orange pill everyone because you think it's like honestly a duty, and it will help. It's like an obligation that you feel to help people understand so that they can get on the life raft and start to protect themselves and increase their financial freedom and empowerment.
Yeah, I hear you on that. So then with all that being said, like, what have you seen in the development of RFK Jr., who's gone to these two events twice, or now this was his second year in a row that he went to the Bitcoin conference? It seems like there was a lot of jump, but you know, you got to interview him and speak with him. So I'm curious your opinion of how he's developed and just his understanding in the Bitcoin space.
So I really admire Robert F. Kennedy Jr. for doing the amount of homework that he has with Bitcoin, because if you sit down with him or if you listen to one of his speeches, you know that he really understands Bitcoin, and he, I think, is very genuine in his desire to protect and support this industry and this network. I think, though, that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. he has a passion, and that passion is to help people with health and to reduce the chronic health epidemic that has swept the nation. And because he's so passionate about that, he places his focus there. And that's okay, because I think that I actually believe that a lot of our health issues that he discusses and places a spotlight on are the result of broken money and our broken financial system and the incentives that it created. And so it's actually, I think that the two are attached, and if you fix the money, you can address some of these core issues. But I think it's great to see how passionate he is about making people healthy. He's got that new slogan, Make America Healthy Again, and he's willing to just, you know, he's willing to face opposition and a lot of people who are very negative toward him because they don't believe what he has to say, but yet he's really put in the homework, and I think he's really genuine. And I love his message, because I think that we do have a chronic health epidemic, and I think a lot of it stems from how awful our monetary system is and how corrupt all these companies have become.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, I really do think that they're all tied. I mean, the fiat system essentially encourages chaos at a certain point in time, right? I mean, with, you know, COVID, and then, you know, with wars, it just causes excessive money printing, and then the rich get richer and everything like that. But, you know, he just recently endorsed Donald Trump, who is also at the Bitcoin conference. So I want to get your initial opinion on, you know, what you heard from Trump at the Bitcoin conference and kind of the development since then.
Well, I mean, again, it's really exciting. I never thought that at this point we would have multiple major presidential candidates talking about Bitcoin, coming out to Bitcoin conferences, talking about embracing Bitcoin. And President Trump, he had in his speech talking about how the DOJ is going to actually keep the Bitcoin or transfer it to the Treasury to create a U.S. strategic Bitcoin stockpile, he called it. So it was exciting. I don't think that he has done his homework quite just yet. I know he's very busy, but he hasn't really fully gone down the rabbit hole. And I know that his family has been involved in some of the altcoin endeavors. And so Bitcoiners are always shaking their heads when they see something like that. But I think he's taking the steps in the right direction. I think he understands that we do need to address our debt, and we do need to allow the Bitcoin industry to flourish and to not have so much regulatory red tape that is destructive, and also based on based on rules that are very unfair compared to how the rest of the financial system works and operates. So I think it's a great step forward. But again, I mean, I would have loved to see him talk about Bitcoin during the presidential debate with Kamala Harris. I think it makes him stand out. And I think people who are passionate about Bitcoin, they see that if you want to vote for Team Orange, only one candidate has spoken positively about it when it comes to the two of them, whereas the Biden-Harris administration has been choking the industry in many ways, and that's been unfortunate. So I think it's bullish either way. I do think that every politician will eventually be a Bitcoiner. I think that we'll soon have a Bitcoiner president in the White House, but it's still very early.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear you. You can tell he kind of just started to learn about Bitcoin for like 3 months before the conference or so. Yeah. But, you know, you mentioned him like kind of and his family kind of dabbling into the altcoin space. Like, what do you make of that? Do you kind of see it like maybe altcoins and Bitcoin are, you know, maybe together, or do you think that they're separate? How do you think that like everybody in the Bitcoin space should, in a sense, look at altcoins going into something like this where, you know, policies can affect one way or the other, can be beneficial to either side? How do you view that?
Well, I'm Bitcoin only. It wasn't that didn't happen right away. I had to really go down a knowledge journey to understand why all the rest of the other the cryptos were different, the different tokens were so different, and why Bitcoin was so special. So for me, Trump's family getting into altcoins is just a sign that they're really early and don't fully understand what Bitcoin is. And I think that that's how most people start, right? And they dabble and they have unit bias and they just don't understand. But at the end of the day, Bitcoin is so different, and it is the one protocol that is truly decentralized. And I tend to be very wary of other tokens that have issuers and that I don't necessarily know if I can trust. I think it's more like investing in equities and companies, and I don't know what these technology platforms are going to do 5, 10, 20 years from now. I'm very wary of proof of stake as a consensus mechanism. I prefer proof of work. So I recommend people watch some of the videos that I've made on why Bitcoin, not crypto, and make up your own mind. Because at the end of the day, finances are such a personal decision. And I truly believe in the free market and the free market deciding what's going to rise to the top. And I think Bitcoin has already shown that it's going to be the king of all the digital assets.
Yeah, there you go. I like that answer. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think all altcoins are going to zero against Bitcoin. And I think it's just a matter of time before we really get to all that place. But I want to dive into a little bit of the macro environment, kind of how you're viewing just the overall current, macro situation, because, I kind of dabble into both sides of things, the Bitcoin space and the traditional finance. I talk to, you know, either sides of them. And it's interesting because if you ask the traditional financial people, they kind of think that Bitcoin and all this is whatever, but they think that the current macro situation, everything's fine. Where if you go on the Bitcoin side of things, everything's crashing and burning and the world's going to end tomorrow. So how would you view it? And I'll leave it pretty broad for you right there. Are you looking for the easiest way to get your Bitcoin off an exchange? Well, I've got it for you. It's Foundation Devices. They've got the number one hardware wallet in the Passport. They've even got a concierge service that can help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange within 1 hour private onboarding session. And they've got a great app too, which will give you extremely, extremely, extremely private features on that app. So you can use Bitcoin in the most secure way possible. So I've been working hard trying to get sponsors to help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange. And I found it with Foundation. And you can store your seed phrase with a stamp seed punch plate as well. So pair all those together. Use promo code GREENCANDLE at foundation.xyz and you'll get $10 off your entire order. All right, that's enough for me. Back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, we're living in interesting times. This debt is so clearly unsustainable. We're paying so much just in interest expenses. The fiscal dominance train is roaring, and yet we have a lot of people struggling. We have decelerating factors in the economy globally. We're having an uptick in unemployment. We're seeing some areas where real estate is on the decline, but at the same time, we still have like really strong stock performances, all-time highs in certain equities. It's just wild. And I just had Mark Moss on my show, and he, I think, articulated it really beautifully. I might start using this. what I see going forward is we crash up. Instead of a deflationary crash, we have an inflationary crash because all roads lead to the money printer. No matter what happens, they have to print to service the debt. And every single year, they have to print more just to achieve the same amount of growth or even less than. And so I just don't see any way out except for people to try to accumulate hard, scarce assets, Bitcoin being the best one, the one that no one can ever seize from you, confiscate, manipulate, censor. So I think it's our best chance for this system that is debt-based and ultimately because of the math is really unsustainable and will continue to put a lot of pressure on the working class. So I think we're going to crash upwards. I think the price of homes is still going to continue to be out of reach for the average person, the average worker, the average young person. Retirement costs so much today. Elder care, child care, these are things that really just make it so difficult for the working class to feel like they can just catch up or tread water. And I think they all need hope, and Bitcoin is hope. So I think that it's imperative that people learn about Bitcoin because it's the only escape out of that system, which again, is just based on debt and will continue to print and debase everyone's savings.
Yeah, I hear you. It's basically like a melt up at this point. Like all asset prices are just going to go through the moon. And so, you know, with that, do you think then, you know, I've been kind of pondering this lately too, where, you know, I think the biggest driver for Bitcoin, as far as like orange pilling and getting people in, is at least in the United States, is number go up, right? I mean, when they hear Bitcoin hit that 100K, do you think it's almost like would maybe be a negative if we hit 100K Bitcoin here? Because it's just a sign of the inflationary times just going through the roof. So sure, like, you know, the Bitcoiners are all fine, but everybody else is kind of hurting. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. How do you view like the price action, the number go up, and all that aspect of everything?
Well, it's just a reflection again of our need to print money and of the dollar becoming less and less valuable. Yes. So I am worried about people. I want them all to embrace Bitcoin and to make sure that they plan for their futures and try to acquire assets because the dollar will continue to lose value. So you need assets. And I do think that Bitcoin hitting 100K is, it's both exciting and also it means that they've continued to devalue our currency, but that's inevitable. So knowing that that is pretty much a certainty, they're not going to all of a sudden decide to move into austerity measures and allow a deflationary crash to happen where we have a Great Depression 2.0. I think that you just need to figure out ways to protect yourself, to protect your money and protect your savings. And Bitcoin is, in my opinion, the best savings technology that we have, especially for young people who want to catch up, who feel like they've been so left behind, as opposed to maybe previous generations who might have accumulated some assets, might have like a nice house or a retirement portfolio that's done well. It's really imperative and critical for young people to embrace Bitcoin. But yeah, money printer will go burr and that will send Bitcoin up. I think it will send stocks and real estate up too, but Bitcoin's going to outperform everything.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on, you know, Bitcoin just outperforming and everything like that. But, you know, do you think essentially at this point, like, you know, with the money printer, it's essentially kicking the can down the road. Do you think that, I mean, obviously it's not sustainable, but, you know, there's the Parker Lewis, the gradually then suddenly theory and everything like that. Like, where do you think we are in kind of this like life cycle of everything?
I just think that things take a really long time to play out. So you need to work to protect yourself, but I just don't envision a situation where we wake up tomorrow and the dollar's no longer the global reserve currency. I think that it's a death by a thousand cuts, and it's going to be very slow and painful as not only individuals start to realize that they need to protect themselves and diversify and get out of cash, but also around the globe, institutions and central banks. I believe today or this weekend, there's BRICS, the next meeting. And, you know, countries are starting to realize that they need to figure out an alternative system because we keep printing and these paper promises. It's no longer going to serve us very, very much that we can just print the reserve currency when we don't really produce anything. And so the net producers of things like oil and commodities, I think they're going to benefit over over the next few decades, especially as they move away from the dollar to things like gold and maybe eventually Bitcoin as well. So I just see this like global shift happening. I think that Lynn Alden articulates it really, really well. Make sure to check out her book, Broken Money. There's a chapter in it called Heavy is the Head That Wears the Crown, and it talks about our status as global reserve currency. And I agree with her that we're moving into more of a multipolar world, but the dollar still is so entrenched in the global system. Everything's priced in dollars. Most debt is denominated in dollars. And so that shift is not going to happen overnight. It's just going to slowly countries and people and companies are diversifying. But the dollar will still remain as a strong payment network, I think, for at least a decade to come, if not longer. I think a lot of currencies will collapse into the dollar, but we are sort of, we're going in the opposite direction of globalism in many ways, because countries need to now isolate and protect themselves a little bit more and decide what they're going to do in this more decentralized state that we're living in. And Bitcoin is beautiful because it actually unifies us once again on a unit that is universal that we can all trust. And we're not there yet. And all the central banks around the world don't get that yet, or they're opposed to it. But it is actually amazing that Bitcoin could bring us together where we don't have to trade a million different currencies. We can be on one standard unit that cannot be manipulated, that is scarce and will hold our purchasing power and our value. And we can interact with one another in a much more fair, equitable way.
Yeah, I mean, that was very well put. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I agree with you on all of that. And I think that the way that things are going, I see basically two paths where it's either, you know, things crash and burn, and then we have to build everything up, and then there's some sort of way, or there's this slower transition that you were kind of describing there. And I agree and hope that that's the way too, yeah. Because I think if we don't get to that place, and if we crash and burn quickly, things can get really, you know, dangerous here for everybody involved, even people who hold Bitcoin. But, you know, on the flip side of things, do you think that we're ready to have, you know, 8 billion people onboarded onto Bitcoin? Or do you think that there still needs to be some sort of development, some sort of infrastructure, all that kind of aspect of things?
I mean, I think that it would be great to have 8 billion people on board overnight, but there are still applications that are being made, and there are people working really hard around the world to help create tools that help onboard people. Lightning Network obviously has to grow. The Bitcoin base layer, we've already seen some of the frictions that exist when you see an increase in demand for that block space, which is also its own form of scarcity, and all of a sudden fees skyrocket, and it makes you question, like, how is this all going to work in the future? And we need these secondary layers. We need things like Lightning Network to grow. So I think if you ask technically, is it ready for 8 billion people to hop onto the network tomorrow? Probably not. But that also won't happen. I think it's going to be a slow and steady march as more people adopt. And I just think that it's because Bitcoin is so technically sound at its base layer, as people adopt, it will grow and flourish with these different innovations and improvements when it comes to just companies allowing people to interact with Bitcoin in an easy, convenient way that doesn't feel like they have to overcome some sort of technological hurdle. That's what's so amazing about the entrepreneurs in the Bitcoin space, because even in the bear market, when it's really, really tough and there's not as much funding for these types of companies, they really work hard with a powerful mission driving them to make sure that Bitcoin is as accessible to everyone, so that you start to interact with it in a way that you don't even think about it, just like we do with our phones. And so I can't wait to see what is invented over the next 5-10 years, and what companies are created so that everyone can really use Bitcoin in a very easy way.
Yeah, 100%. I definitely feel like this bear market was a little bit different, where we saw more builders get into it and everything else. But we also did see something big happen at the beginning of this year, the ETFs. So what do you make of traditional finance getting into the Bitcoin space and trying to embrace it? Are you wary of companies like BlackRock getting into it? Do you think it's one step? Like, how do you view overall just traditional finance kind of hopping on board the Bitcoin bandwagon?
Well, I think everything is good for Bitcoin. I think it's a net positive. I think it's a sign that Bitcoin is beginning to assimilate and integrate with the legacy financial system. And I do believe that it's a bit of a Trojan horse that will positively influence the greater system that we're all a part of. I think it will eventually, not anytime soon, but hopefully eventually start to demonetize other asset classes that basically just saw pools of money flood there because there was nowhere else to place the money, right? Things like real estate, where you're like, why is this house that was brand new in 1970, $100,000, now it's $2 million and it's falling apart? I mean, those are the things that I hope Bitcoin sort of addresses and allows real value to come to the surface again. And the ETFs are just one vehicle. Just because a company acquires a lot of Bitcoin does not mean that they can change or influence the protocol. Most of this has been a very retail-driven phenomenon. It's been very bottom-up. It's been middle class to the wealthy, to the 1% in Wall Street. They came in after us, which is cool and exciting. But now they're creating a vehicle and an instrument that will allow things like pension funds and money managers, financial institutions to start to get into Bitcoin. And it's a foot in the door. I think that the ETFs will be the first step for a lot of people before they actually take, they buy spot Bitcoin and take self-custody. I think it's just like a more approachable, familiar vehicle. So I think that they're just great. And I think we can't expect too much too early again. They've already broken records when it comes to how many assets under management they've been able to pull. But it's still early, and a lot of these companies, it takes time for them to talk to everyone that's involved in decision making and to change their charters and decide to allocate to this very new asset class. So the institutional wave has started, but it hasn't fully come in with all the power and might that I think it will.
Yeah, and then I agree with you too with that as well. But what do you make of the comparison to the gold ETFs?
Well, I believe it's exceeded. I mean, in terms of the growth and how quickly they've been able to achieve just record-breaking inflows, I think that they've exceeded what happened with the gold ETFs. And I do wonder in the future, I don't think that we'll necessarily have 11 different Bitcoin ETFs. I think that liquidity is kind of like a race, which one was going to be the biggest, and then that one will be sort of the big ETF. Maybe there will be two. So it is a little bit of a race. I think that's what's going to change. But I think that people are... Again, gold is wonderful and it has served as an amazing form of hard money for a very long time. But the reason that we got to our fiat system, which is so flawed and corrupted at its core, is because gold was defective as a monetary technology. It was too cumbersome to transport it over long distances. It's not easy to verify and move and have final settlement that is very fast. So we papered over it. And then paper can be very easily manipulated, especially when you move paper to digital electronic ledgers. And then you could just literally, add digits like the central bank does to these massive banks. And all of a sudden you have so many more trillions of dollars of money supply in the economy. So I think that's what Bitcoin fixes. Bitcoin is a better version. It improves on the properties of gold that gold has. And that's why it's the best hard money that has ever existed. And I think gold bugs will start to realize that and want a piece of Bitcoin.
I think so as well. But it's been interesting kind of just like looking at the comparisons and the parallels to me, at least to the gold ETFs, to the Bitcoin ETFs. I mean, we've seen net outflows for the past 3-ish years of the gold ETFs, but we've seen the gold price nearly double in the past 5. And that's big part because the central banks have been buying up gold and they've been doing it for quite some time now. Do you see a world where you think that, central banks might start to buy up Bitcoin to kind of, what other stage we're at, whether it's the US dollar is just hyperinflating away or something like that? Or do you think that, in a sense, the central banks are always going to want to have some sort of power and, the buying of Bitcoin is going to be a very slow and down the road process? Are you looking for a way to live on a Bitcoin standard? Have you been trying to do it? You just can't figure it out? Well, I've got it for you. It's at BitRefill. You can go to bitrefill.com/invitesgreencandle to sign up, where you can use Bitcoin to buy gift cards on Airbnb, Uber. You can buy plane tickets with Bitcoin. So you could travel the world, see everything going on. You can even buy eSIMs when you're there to help contact your friends and family. So go ahead and join the revolution. Live on a Bitcoin standard so you don't have to wait for the banks after you sell your Bitcoin, transfer the fiat to your bank, and then go through all the rigmarole, all the fiat trash that you've tried to get through and avoid. Avoid all that. Use BitRefill and sign up here today, and I'll give you $5 towards everything that you are buying with BitRefill. All right, enough from me. Join the revolution on the Bitcoin standard, and back to the show.
Well, I definitely think it will be slow, but I definitely also think that central banks will be buying Bitcoin. I think that they will be racing to accumulate as much as they can because it is the hardest, scarcest asset that you can possibly own. And I think that that will come probably in this decade. I am bullish on that because Bitcoin is so special and it's moving so rapidly to this next, you know, institutional level. And I think it's reaching the political sphere in terms of how powerful this has become. So I do see it happening, but again, all of this happens very, very slowly. And I think that nation states will eventually realize how strategic it is to be a leader in accumulating Bitcoin, also mining it. I think Max Keiser always talks about how there's going to be hash wars instead of currency wars. And hopefully those types of wars will be more peaceful overall, because I think I agree with all the people that have talked so much in the space about how fiat encourages violence and encourages these kinetic conflicts where you exert your power over someone else and you want to confiscate their property, and it's almost easier to become a bully as a nation when you can print money and you don't have to tax the citizens in order to finance these wars and these imperial goals or plans. And I would like that to change. I would like for all of us to be more cooperative and peaceful, because the majority of people, if you ask them, do you want to be financing these wars with people that you know nothing about and you have nothing to do with, I would argue that most people say, no, I don't want that. I'd like for us to get along and be incentivized to resolve our conflicts diplomatically. And I think that fixing our money will actually contribute positively to that as well in the geopolitical conflicts that exist.
100%. And you brought up Max Keiser, so I've got to ask you about El Salvador. How you've seen and viewed this rise since they've made Bitcoin legal tender and, Nayib Bukele just coming in there and it's seemingly flipping El Salvador on its head and for the better. So how are you viewing this development? And do you equate it to a big part to them making Bitcoin legal tender? Or how do you view all that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a revolutionary, very progressive move on President Bukele's part. I had the chance to sit down with him and speak with him 2 years ago, and I was very impressed. I was very impressed by his knowledge of Bitcoin, that he had really sat down and done the homework. He was a student of everyone from Seyfedin, who wrote the Bitcoin standard, to Ray Dalio and the Austrian economist. So I found him to be very intelligent. And talking to him a little bit about his background, how he came up. He was a business owner before he ran for office, and learning a little bit about his family. His intentions seem to be very pure. Now, having said that, I have an inherent distrust of politicians in general, because we've seen so many that go into office with great intentions and then all of a sudden, you know, a couple of years later, you realize that they're just as corrupt as anyone else. But I do think that the fact that he's embracing a form of money that will empower his population, that he can never rule over, manipulate, change, inflate, I think that's powerful in and of itself. And he knows the opportunity that exists, the asymmetric opportunity. If a country like El Salvador, which has been among the poorest in the world, if it embraces Bitcoin early, what that could do for future generations. And I think he has that very real hope and mission. And I think that more leaders will follow suit. It's been cool to follow him. He's a millennial. We have young leadership, which I wish we had in this country, where young leaders that are passionate about Bitcoin are in those positions. But at the same time, I don't live in El Salvador, so I'm not as familiar with all the day-to-day issues. I just hope that people are taking the time to understand Bitcoin, because that when it first became legal tender, people got Chivo wallets and they had some Bitcoin deposited, and most people just transferred it over to fiat. But being on the ground there, I have seen very, very positive developments. A lot of people saying that before they wanted to leave El Salvador because they saw no hope in the future. And now that's changed. They see themselves becoming entrepreneurs. Bitcoin's allowing them the ability to save. It's bringing a lot of activity and tourism and production to El Salvador. So that's really exciting. And I hope that continues.
Yeah. And it seems like it's on pace to continue. But I mean, we had Vivek. He was kind of close. I don't know how much of a chance he really had in the presidential race, but he was one that was, closer to the millennial age. But outside of him, I agree with you. We get all of these people who, almost are on their deathbed, unfortunately, running for office here. But, what do you make of potential developments in other countries? Do you anticipate that as another driver, right? We're getting institutional adoption kind of from business aspects and everything like that, whether it's pension funds, but also we're getting Javier Milei, potential president in Suriname coming up that are all kind of interested in Bitcoin. Do you think that's another step that we'll really see drive forward in the next, 3 to 4 years or so?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since El Salvador made the announcement. So I think we're due for another country that maybe we don't know. Work is being done behind the scenes on the ground all over the world. And I've had the chance to meet some of the amazing people who are working to orange pill the leaders of different countries. And so I'm curious to know which country will be next. And what's great, I think what was one of the most exciting things about this last Bitcoin cycle and with this election coming up is having presidential candidates talk about the US potentially becoming one of those countries to move to create the strategic reserve, to protect self-custody, to allow for us to use Bitcoin as a medium of exchange by removing the capital gains tax on a certain threshold of expenditures, which is moving its way through the potential legislature proposals. So in the coming years, I think you'll be able to spend up to maybe, I don't know how many tens of thousands of Bitcoin before you're actually taxed on it, which would be really cool. It would incentivize using it as a medium of exchange. So I think we're moving in the right direction. And who knows, it might be a G7 country that announces next, or it could be another small developing nation. But that's what's so exciting, because it's all part of game theory.
Yeah. And I think game theory is really playing out. But what are the biggest, hurdles do you think that of switching from the United States? Because I think we're really much in a HODL mentality here. What do you think is the biggest, hurdle for, just the average American to go into spending, or the average Bitcoiner to go into his spending mode, opposed to just the HODL mentality?
I just think it's all about convenience and incentive. So if the applications are really easy to use and you go places and the merchants are accepting Bitcoin, then you're more likely to spend it. You're also more likely to spend it if, say, you get rewards. That's why I've loved working with companies like Fold, and I use Speed Wallet for Lightning, and they incentivize you because you get rewards if you use them, in the same way that in the fiat world, a lot of people use credit cards because they're going to get reward miles, not realizing that there's like a 40% inflation rate year over year on those. So I think, again, as we see more applications and more companies and more merchants accepting Bitcoin and all of that, people will just inherently, just naturally go to their phone and take out their Bitcoin to spend it. But that'll take a little bit of time as well. We are very early. A lot of people do have that saving HODL mentality, which I do as well. I mean, I'm trying to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. But at the same time, it's so fun when you go somewhere, especially when you travel and you meet another Bitcoiner and they're operating some sort of a business, and you have the chance to support that business through Bitcoin, and you get to take out your wallet and make that transaction. And every time you do, I think there's something so special about it. It's simple. The fact that, I mean, I literally just exchanged, this digital token from where I am to that other person with no intermediary. No one had to offer me permission to do it, and it settles instantly. I mean, how exciting is that? And every time I use Bitcoin, I think about that and how cool it is.
Yeah, and I think that that's amazing. Yeah, I mean, that highlights a great thing too, because I feel like, you know, when you meet another Bitcoiner, you're sort of on the same wavelength already. You already have like the same ideology. You kind of know a little bit about that person without even really knowing them too. So I think it's always great. But I do think that there's like just a huge hurdle to get over here in the US, even with a lot of Bitcoiners, where there's just one, like not a lot of merchants just because of, you know, the capital gains aspect of it. So how huge do you think that that bill would be if it actually gets through and gets passed, where the capital gains tax is, you know, taken away from the, you know, transacting in Bitcoin? Do you think that'll automatically just kind of make it a little bit easier, and like the hurdles that we have right now make it a little bit more difficult for merchants to accept Bitcoin? So do you think that that's the biggest hurdle, or do you think that there's something else here?
Yeah, I mean, the tax rules right now make it a little bit prohibitive, because technically you're supposed to keep track of every single time that you sell Bitcoin or you make a transaction, because that's technically a taxable event. So it can get very cumbersome, especially if you're spending your Bitcoin a lot, because you're selling it at a certain cost basis, you bought it at another, and you have to calculate the difference. So there's not a lot of incentive if you're going to make your taxes very complicated. But I think it's inevitable that they're going to change this rule. It already is this way in other nations. And so I've had the chance to sit down with people like U.S. Senator Cynthia Lummis, who is working to make this a threshold. And she's been speaking with people all across the world, asking the questions of like, well, what's the threshold in your country? You know, what should the threshold be here? I know that citizens can weigh in on this. Like, you can call in and say, you know what, I think the threshold should be $30,000 because of X, Y, and Z. And they're asking for input. So that's really, really exciting. And I think it's just a matter of time before that changes. I think also the SAB 121 rule is going to actually be repealed, because that's what Congress wanted. And then Biden vetoed it. So I think eventually banks will custody Bitcoin on behalf of their clients, which I think will also, you know, take down some barriers. And the FASB rules are changing and going into effect in January. So it's going to make holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet a lot more accretive to companies. So we have a lot in the coming years that's going to be a tailwind for Bitcoin, which is really exciting.
Yeah, 100%. But before I let you go, one last question. What's the most exciting thing with all the things that you list out? What's the number one driver, do you think, that's going to help bring on a bunch of people into the Bitcoin standard?
I really do agree with you when you said earlier, number go up. I think it's going to be so exciting, especially because many of us have waited so long this last cycle. We had an all-time high in 2021, I think it was. And then we had one this year, but it wasn't like it wasn't that much higher than the previous all-time high. So I think we're really due for a really good bull run, like some real momentum, pound through the six figures. And that will be a really exciting time. And it will also be a time of great responsibility for us Bitcoiners to help people understand, so they're not just FOMOing in with a gambling mentality, but really to really help educate them on how transformative this will be for our financial system.
That's great. Well, Natalie, you've been very generous with your time, so thank you for coming on. Why don't you tell people where they could find you and what else you got going on?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really passionate about educating people about Bitcoin. I talk a lot about the space as well as macro. So you can follow me on X at Nat Brunel. My podcast is called Coin Stories. You can check it out on every podcasting and video platform. And my website's talkingbitcoin.com. So reach out. Would love to hear from you.
Yep, I'll link all that in the show notes. And Natalie, thanks so much. Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.